This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome back to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. We are proud to be the UK's number one and multi-award winning legal consumer podcast. Our legal conversation today will be on one-punch killers. I am joined by senior barrister Simon Spence KC from Red Lion Chambers in London. Simon has successfully prosecuted and defended numerous very high-profile and fatal violent offences for many years. His cases have included a number of highly complex matters which have attracted national and international media attention. Simon is also ranked in the Legal 500 and in Chambers and Partners. Simon, it's so good to have you. Thank you so much for joining me again today.
Not at all. Good to see you. Thank you for having me.
One punch killers, a single blow resulting in a death, often when the perpetrator does not intend to kill, but nevertheless, a single punch that has a devastating effect. So how do our laws view an unfortunate and unexpected criminal act when the intention was not to kill and possibly the only intention was to have a good old-fashioned street brawl? Would the perpetrator be given any leniency in law? Controversy surrounds this topic, with questions being asked on what is a fair price for someone to pay for causing a death, even though it could be unintended. And in some cases, it has been argued that long prison sentences should not be handed out. In this episode, Simon and I will be bringing you interesting, insightful and jargon-free conversation on this topic, as always, in plain and simple English. Simon, a one-punch death is reported to be the most commonly prosecuted offence. And today we're talking about the circumstances in which there was no intention to kill. What would it be prosecuted as, and what does the law for this, which act does it fall under? And I have to say, I was really surprised when I was researching this and I came across the fact that it's one of the most commonly prosecuted offences.
It is, because the problem with one-punch manslaughters is there's clearly an intention to hurt somebody, but not to cause them really serious harm. So it's not murder. But a one punch to somebody who's drunk, for example, and unsteady on their feet, if it's winter and there's ice on the ground, they could fall over backwards, hit their head, and die. And one punch manslaughters are very common indeed. And the question is, could they be seen in a separate category for the purposes of sentence from other offences of manslaughter? Or should they be sentenced in just the same way under the sentencing guidelines for unlawful act manslaughter generally? And the answer to that now is that they are dealt with by applying the sentencing guidelines to a one-punch manslaughter. And so they've been brought in to the same category as other offences of manslaughter. When I started at the bar, one-punch manslaughters were seen very much as a separate form of killing. And you did see, back in the 80s and 90s, some really very, very lenient sentences where somebody lost their lives. And I think that's what caused the process which ultimately led to the introduction of the sentencing guidelines.
Yes, no, indeed. I mean, it is extraordinary because I mentioned to you before we press record on this podcast, I actually knew somebody that died from a one-punch blow to their head. And it was two teenagers. I believe the intention wasn't to kill, but he died. And, you know, it's one of those where you kind of think, well, you've got to look at what actually your act resulted in. It resulted in a death. But unlawful act manslaughter, as it's defined in law, to my understanding, it says it's recognised by a sober and reasonable person as being dangerous and likely to subject the victim to the risk of some physical harm, which in turn causes their death. And then I thought, well, what does unlawful act actually mean? And it says, for the purposes of constructive manslaughter, the act must constitute a criminal offence. But
yeah,
I mean, it's incredibly tragic for everybody involved, let alone the families of
absolutely.
People.
And of course, with one punch manslaughter, it does give rise to the possibility of reasonable self-defense, which is an outright defense to manslaughter. One of the cases sticks in my mind when I was a very junior barrister. I was defending a young man being led by a silk. He was a man of good character, a youngster learning to drive, but he was also quite a keen amateur boxer. And he was going down a one-way street, and this crowd of hooligans were strung across the street. They'd all been drinking, and he couldn't get past. And he got out of his car and went to remonstrate with them. And the ringleader of this gang came up to him in a fairly aggressive way. And my client delivered one punch, but because he was an amateur boxer, it was a good one. And this chap, because he was drunk, went over, banged the back of his head and died. So that's a case where, until trial, he was wanting to run self-defense. The difficulty is he'd lied in interview and said he wasn't there. He panicked. But we had got an independent witness from a flat above a shop who'd seen the whole thing. And so we thought he had a very good chance of being acquitted on the basis of reasonable self-defense, because having delivered the one punch, he then got back in his car and left. He didn't maintain his assault. And it was one of those cases, back in those days, judges could informally indicate sentence. And we were in front of a high court judge who basically called us into his room and said, look, I feel very sorry for this lad. And this is what I'm going to give him. And he was going to give him a sentence of 3 years. The problem was, he'd been in custody, he'd then come out on bail, and it would have meant going back inside. And so we tried to argue that he'd served enough time. The judge didn't accept that. But I still to this day feel that he was put under improper pressure to plead guilty to unlawful act manslaughter, because I think he had a good chance with self-defense as an outright defense. But of course, the trouble is, he was actually charged with murder, and it was only on the day of the trial that the judge intervened and said to the prosecution, "Are you taking manslaughter here?" And they said for the first time, "Yes." So it completely changed the landscape. But I still can't help worrying that this young man ended up serving 3 years when he may have been acquitted outright.
But this is it, isn't it? Because I mean, I've had this conversation in terms of it depends on your judge on the day,
yeah.
You know, and yes, we have the law defined and enshrined in statute, but then the judge, you know, if you have a sympathetic judge, that's one thing. And there'll be one side, obviously not happy that there is a sympathetic judge. And then if you don't have a sympathetic judge, that's another thing. Your outcome, you know, could be different. And in that case, I'd say, well, how, you know, no one could have known whether he would have been acquitted if he didn't plead guilty or not. And it does play on your mind, I would imagine, you know,
absolutely,
particularly, and, you know, when you're involved in the case itself, as to what could the outcome have been?
Yes, absolutely. And it took him all day to make his mind up. I mean, this poor lad was sitting there humming and hawing. And there's only so much advice we can give as to what the outcome would be. But going back to what you're saying about the judge, of course, that's one of the things that led to the setting up of the sentencing council and the issuing of guidelines, because one-punch manslaughter was one of those offences where there was a very inconsistent approach passing sentence. Some judges were very lenient. Others took the view, well, no, a life has been lost and somebody has to pay. And so now, compared to what one-punch manslaughter sentences used to be, if you apply the Sentencing Council guidelines, which I've got in front of me, you know, if it's in Category B, where there was an unlawful act with an intention to cause harm falling just short of GBH, it's a starting point of 12 years with a range from 8 to 16. So, you know, a judge could say, well, one hard punch falls just short of GBH. And so you're looking at a sentence in double figures.
But then there's a minimum sentence of 12 months.
That's right. That's right. That's the Category D.
Isn't there? Yeah. Unlawful act manslaughter, minimum sentence 12 months, maximum 24 years.
Yeah. I mean, technically, the maximum is life, but it's very rare to get life for unlawful act manslaughter.
Yes.
But when the sentencing guidelines first came in, there a number of judges continued to ignore them. And there have been a couple of Attorney General's references dealing specifically with one-punch manslaughters. And the Attorney General can refer what he considers an unduly lenient sentence to the Court of Appeal for it to be increased. And the Court of Appeal have made it very clear that one-punch manslaughters are like any other manslaughter, and the judge has to assess the degree of harm. And they have said it would almost always fall into Category B or C. But even looking at those, the bottom of the category for Category C is 3 years, which, you know, historically would be a typical one-punch manslaughter sentence, but going up to the top of Category B of 16 years. So where are you supposed to pitch it when you've got a 13-year difference between 3 years at the bottom and 16 years at the top?
Yeah.
And this is one of the problems with manslaughter. The scope and the range of possibilities for the commission of the offence is so wide that you do need a very wide bracket of sentencing to give the judge sufficient discretion to do what he perceives as justice.
Well, this is it. And it is very controversial because you've got the family on the other side who have lost somebody to a single blow. And there's been so many reported cases, and even recent of last year, the No Joan Cathy case that I read. And then you've got the actual perpetrator, if you like, who did the deed. Yeah. And if it is self-defense, I mean, do you often see, is it possible to be... for not to be prosecuted under you know, defence for a one-punch murder?
It would have to be a very clear case for the CPS not prosecuted. You know, going back to what we were saying at the start, it only needs a fight outside a pub on a Friday or Saturday night.
Mm.
And for somebody to be punched, and because they're drunk, they lose their balance and hit their head and they're dead. And that's why it's so common. And it, of course, in that situation where it's a two-sided fight, it always gives rise to the possibility of self-defense. And certainly if it was charged as murder, which the case I was just referring to a few minutes ago was, there's no incentive at all to do anything other than have a trial. If the prosecution are willing to consider manslaughter, then of course that's a different consideration. And you then have to weigh up the risk on the one hand of being convicted of murder if there's a trial and taking the offer of manslaughter by way of a guilty plea. But then that does put pressure on a defendant to abandon his claim of self-defense.
Yes.
Knowing that he's going to get anything between 3 and 16 years, depending on the judge.
Well, this is it. I mean, it must be such a hard call, particularly if... you know, you're minding your own business, something happens, you react, your reflexes, reaction, your defense mechanism, or to protect yourself, you know, you swing a single punch and it has that devastating effect. I think if you're going about your normal way of life, and if you're not a troublemaker, if you're not somebody who frequently gets into brawls and, you know, has been arrested before, and if you're just a normal, you know, citizen, so to speak, and that happens to you and you're the perpetrator, Goodness. I mean, do you often see people? Has there been many people who've not been prosecuted even after trial? In your experience?
Generally speaking, I think whenever there's a death, the pressure on the CPS to prosecute, even if they think they're going to lose the case, I think the pressure is considerable. And I know from my own experience of prosecuting that the CPS take the view we would rather run the case and lose than make a decision that there hasn't been a crime committed. And if we
That's
can offload the
interesting.
responsibility for the acquittal onto the jury, then at least the CPS, can say, well, we did our duty, we
True.
prosecuted, and the jury decided they couldn't be sure. And that, of course, is the system operating properly. The way I've just described it rather makes it sound as if the CPS are ducking their responsibility, and
Passing
they
the
don't.
buck. Yes, no, I hear you.
And they don't. And it's very rare, in fact. I can only think of two cases in my entire career where somebody's been charged and we've had to review it and come to the decision that there isn't sufficient evidence, either of an unlawful act, or in another case, we couldn't necessarily prove it was the defendant. But beyond that, I think the prosecution's position is they will prosecute and let the jury make the decision. And that's how our
Yes.
system should work. That's why we have juries to try cases like this, and particularly perhaps one-punch manslaughters, where nobody is suggesting the outcome was in any way even contemplated,
Intended.
let alone intended. And so the jury will have some sympathy with that. And, they may have experienced similar sort of events themselves if they've been out for a night, and they may have seen it across the other side of the street or whatever it may be. But I think the jury are best placed, and they have this sort of innate sense of whether a defendant is the aggressor or was merely seeking to defend themselves, or somewhere between the two, in which case they can't be sure. And so it would be a very rare case where I think I would advise not prosecute.
I mean, as a layperson, I'd sit there and say, look, whether it's intended or not, we could argue that somebody died as a result. So, regardless of the intention, there should be responsibility taken for that, and there should be a sentence given for that. But then, if I sit on the other side of the fence and I'm the person thinking, well, I was the one that made, threw that punch, and it happened very quickly, because often these things happen very, very quickly. I don't think,
Oh, absolutely.
I don't think somebody, the example you gave of the case that you were involved many years ago, somebody's driving, minding their own business. They come under threat, they try to defend themselves, they throw a punch, and then they carry on, they move on. They don't sit there and continue their aggression against the person that they've just punched. So I can see both sides of the story. I can totally get it, and I think it's so difficult because, as I mentioned, I had a friend who died of a one punch, and I can't even fathom what it must be like to be his family, losing a teenage son, a brother. But then I look at the person that did it and think, well, they've lost a child as well.
Yes, absolutely. And this is why that they are some of the most difficult cases on a human level to deal with. But equally, there's this sort of mindset: if someone's died, somebody has to be held responsible for it. But actually, if the person who died is the aggressor, they have to be responsible for their own actions at that time. I'm not suggesting for a moment they deserve to die, but if the reaction to their aggression is a single punch, to my mind, applying the law of self-defense that we have in this country, that would give you a good defense in law. And this idea that, somebody has to pay, somebody has to be held responsible, no matter what the circumstances, is a rather odd attitude.
I have to agree with that. I have to agree, because you have to look at the circumstances. If the innocent party, if the person that threw the punch was the innocent party to why that punch was being thrown, you could have somebody on top of you trying to, kill you, kill you or cause really, you know, a lot of harm to you. I think every circumstance is very individual.
Yeah.
It has to be taken on that merit.
Absolutely. And that's why, and say the case of my learner driver sort of still lives with me, because I really thought he had a very good chance of being acquitted. And, you know, he was 17, I think, or 18 by the time the trial came on.
Goodness, very young.
And I mean, I'm sure, you know, he'll have served his sentence. And I don't know what he's doing now, but I assume he's led a perfectly law-abiding life. But it's not a great start.
No, will you get a criminal record?
For manslaughter, you're 18.
Especially under the circumstances, you think, you know, it's not fair that he was put into that position, and it's very unfortunate that it ended up in that way. But yes, yeah. I mean, I think what we're saying is that the strongest defense to a one-punch death is self-defense, and trying to prove that it was purely self-defense.
Absolutely. And of course, we do have the safeguard in this country, and it's a proper safeguard, that once you raise self-defense, it's not for you to prove you were acting in self-defense, it's for the prosecution to prove that you weren't.
That's interesting.
So the presumption is you were defending yourself, unless and until the prosecution can prove either it wasn't necessary, or even if it was necessary, it wasn't reasonable in all of the circumstances.
Yes.
And that's the difference, I think, between a one-punch manslaughter and other forms of homicide.
Yes.
Because if you deliver one punch and have the self-control to say, well, I've done what I need to do, I will now retreat, then that's a very good basis for the prosecution being unable to disprove self-defense.
Very interesting.
And I don't know what the statistics are for the conviction rate for one-punch manslaughters, which are contested, but I suspect...
That'd be an interesting statistic, yes.
It would. I suspect it would be higher than the national average. Because from a defence perspective, it's very easy. Well, members of the jury, he didn't carry on. He didn't punch a second, third or fourth time.
Yes.
The minute the danger had gone, he desisted and left. And I think that would be a very attractive argument for a jury trying a one-punch manslaughter.
Yes. No, indeed. It's very, very interesting stuff. And as I said, I can sit on both sides of the fence and understand the position. I can also sit here as a complete layperson and say, well, you're right. Why should there have to be a price to pay if the circumstances were not that the perpetrator created the scene, caused the irritation, created the fear that was brought onto him, and was merely reacting to try to keep and safeguard themselves and defend themselves? And I mean, even if it is two people coming together, one person would have paid for it with their life and the other person would have paid for it, no doubt, with their life, because your life would utterly change with a criminal record and having to serve a prison sentence.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it could never have been normal on that basis. But Simon, that's all we've got time for.
Good. Thank you, Hattie.
It always flies by. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for your wise words and your expertise.
Not at all.
What I say to our listeners is, don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts. We have over 160 to choose from. You can find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening.